Good morning, everybody, and I hope you're all having a fantastic Thursday. This is episode 18 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, and I'm your host, Coleman Payne. I want to welcome everybody who's tuning in this morning. I see Tom Tabor out there, AC, Hunter, Wade. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Jacob. While everybody's still getting the gunk out of their eyes and refilling your coffee and finding a comfortable chair, I'm going to go over what the purpose of this space is while you're starting to settle in. And the purpose of this is it's pretty simple. It's to defend the values that our nation was founded upon. We want to champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals, communities, and small businesses, and eliminate a central authority so we can advance the cause of a free and open society. We do this by harnessing the power of Bitcoin to promote a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, their own assets, and their own privacy. We do not support tyranny in any of its forms, and we will use our combined experience and passion to ensure that the promise of liberty thrives, and together, oaths to safeguard the ideals that define us. We are veterans. We are Bitcoiners, and most importantly, we are for freedom. Hoorah, everybody. I was going to make a joke about us being at 58K when I started writing all today's notes, but it looks like we dipped back under, so maybe by the end of the show, we'll be back at 58K. Good morning, Gabe Lord.
Good morning. How are we doing today?
We're doing really good.
Man, that is awesome. Same here. It's a beautiful day. There's a lot of reasons to have a tremendous amount of hope in general. I'm just feeling good, man. I think I've just been reading the right people's posts in my feed this morning, and I'm seeing a lot of hope. So it's an awesome day.
Yes, and that could be a huge thing, you know. You get on that algo where it starts to be all doom and gloom, it can sit you down on the wrong path. So I'm glad the algos were friendly and positive this morning for you. There's a rumor going around, and I definitely want to hit on it a little bit. The rumor that I've been hearing is that there may be a Bitcoin Veterans Conference in Alaska this year. Has anybody else heard that rumor? I see a lot of fist pumps and thumbs, so I'm going to take a yeah, I'm not the only one. So make sure, stay tuned for that. I think as we get more information, we will be sharing it with you all. But I believe the rumor is that in early July, in Juneau, there's going to be a conference. So we'll keep you updated with that as it starts to roll out. And in case you're new here, if you're a veteran, please reach out to us, send us a direct message, and we're going to get you in contact with one of our extended community members. There's over 600 of us, and we're just constantly growing. So please reach out to us if you have any questions with anything. I want to welcome Terrence and Bob Van Kirk to the stage. Good morning, gentlemen.
How's it going, Coleman? What's the good news today other than the Alaska conference, which I'm assuming maybe Wade is involved in that? Up there?
Yes, Wade is involved. I don't have too much of the specific details and can't go over too much more other than just trying to plant the seed for everybody that there's most likely going to be a conference in Juneau in July. And if y'all have never been to Alaska, you couldn't pick a better time to go visit. It is one of those places where if you go in the summer in the right time in July, you're never going to want to leave. So feel free to just get a one-way ticket. So there's quite a few things I want to cover today. The first thing I think we'll talk about to start on kind of a good note for us as Bitcoiners is, Jacob, if you go ahead and start loading that Lynn Alden video. Lynn Alden, I think last night, went on Fox News and or Fox Business, sorry, and was talking about the issue that is the U.S. government and their spending. And so I just want to play a short little clip where she goes over some of the big talking points, and we'll dissect that video as soon as it's done. So, Jacob, if you're ready to go, give me a thumbs up, and we'll go ahead and we'll listen to it. It's about a minute and a half, and then we'll talk about it.
Would that, could that be the thing that trips us up, that takes us from our sort of preeminence, you know, the world's reserve currency, those sort of things that we enjoy right now and perhaps take for granted?
In the long term, yes. I think in the intermediate term, nothing really stops this train. I think this is kind of locked in for quite a while. And it's not like calling for something major by next year or the year after. But I do think that we are now more structurally in this period where we can't necessarily assume that the foreign sector is going to be buying a lot of our treasuries. We can't assume that the private sector is always ready to step in with reasonable yields. And even to the extent that they do, basically, anyone holding those is likely to get, you know, gradually devalued in terms of their purchasing power over the next 5, 10, 15 years. So I do think it is a longer term issue that has consequences now. And it's, you know, a decade ago, this was a meaningful political item that would come up. They would debate what are we going to do about the deficits. And now one of the things that both parties kind of agree on is not really to cut any of the major spending areas. They've got plenty of other differences, but the major areas of spending and the size are not really being like meaningful topics in the current political climate.
And it feels like almost every year there's a new spending plan that maybe was discretionary, but now we can't cut it. So the areas that cut get smaller and smaller every single year, to your point, no matter which party's in power.
Exactly.
Lynn, great stuff. Really appreciate your work and this. This is a critical thing that everyone should understand and know about.
So again, it's always fun listening to a Lynn Alden speech. She's just so intelligent and just has so many different aspects to hit on. And so I always encourage, if she has something out there, please just give it a read or a listen. But prior to this video, there was about a minute that we skipped over. And to kind of load up to her speech, she was talking about what's causing the issues into our current fiscal issues. And one of the things she started mentioning was Social Security, the issue with that, where they're going to run out of money. Because when it was first created, they did anticipate a slowing population growth to contribute it to that pot. She also talked about our healthcare cost. It's the highest per capita out of any major nation, and it's only going up. And the care that we get isn't on par for what it's cost. Our military expense is large, and now the interest expense is larger than the military budget. So those are some of the things she was touching on before we started listening to her speak. And so if anybody up here wants to go ahead and mention, or just kind of talk about what was discussed.
I wonder what happened in Lynn's childhood that caused her to have this fascination with locomotive braking systems. It's like she talks about it all the time.
Yeah, nothing stops this train. But she's right. She mentioned that the way to get out of this is to cut spending. And from yesterday with Thomas Massie, where he was talking about this political theater, they have no intention of cutting any spending whatsoever because they're addicted to it. And therefore, there's the easiest meme to tweet is there's no one stopping this train because it can't be stopped. And at this point, it just has too much momentum.
Yeah, well, anyone who's like witnessed, you know, or maybe even personally, but, you know, if you've witnessed a family or a friend or someone who's gone deep into debt and has done the whole, you know, credit card leapfrogging and whatnot, you know, you reach a point where you see why they go bankrupt, or, you know, they reach the bottom. And, you know, obviously individuals can't print their own money, so you know where it goes. And because the government can continue to print, just, you know, similar to other currencies that have failed in the past. And Ray Dalio covers that great in one of his videos that's been shared everywhere, you know, moving from the Spanish escudo to the, you know, Dutch guilder to the British pound, you know, to the US. And it's like, at a certain point, you know, nothing does stop the train, because unless we are going to be fiscally responsible, the Fed and the central bank is going to continue to print to support. Support them. I forget who set it up. Said this. I think it was Joe Carlisari. I love how he said it. He said something about how the government's the one that gets us into trouble, but the Fed is like the janitor that comes and cleans it up. And so, you know, we're just going to continue with printing in QE to help cover up all the deficit spending.
Yes, and I really enjoy following Joe Carlisari. Although, again, I think he just puts it really black and white, and he's not afraid to go against the narrative. And I think that's why he's a really good follow if you guys aren't following him. Because again, he'll keep you grounded and he'll keep you pretty honest, and he sticks to the facts. And so he's a really good person. I've tried to get him up here a couple times. So if anybody has connections with him, please feel free to reach out to him and see if he'll come on. I always like hearing what he has to say. But this comes in on a time where this morning the EU just cut their interest rates by another 25 basis points. So that's two back-to-back that they've done cuts on. And next week on the 18th, the Fed is expected to do their first rate cut. And so I'd like to see what everybody thinks that cut's going to come in at.
It looks like the poly markets are still pricing 25 basis points, not 50. I think 50 would be bad. That tells us that they're really concerned about what's going on.
Yes, I think a larger cut means that the economy is not doing so well, and a smaller cut means that we're trucking along. So I expect a 25 basis point cut, and I think that'll really help with the bull thesis in the market, where it's just going to keep going up. AC, did you have something you wanted to say, sir?
No, I was going to say the same thing. I'm guessing it's going to be 25 basis points as well.
Do they ever not do it in quarter cuts? Like, is there such thing as a 3 or 4?
I forget who posted it. I was actually trying to find it as we were talking. But somebody did have something about there hasn't been a 50 basis point cut in like 20 years and the effects that had on the economy. Don't quote me on it because I'm trying to find it because I probably dorked it up. But there was some analysis done on that recently.
Wait, so after March of 2020 with COVID and the precipitous drop in rates, we didn't, they were all just quarter drops?
I'm not 100%. I'm still looking for the data.
Now, that would be surprising. I would have thought they would have dropped a significant amount during COVID, because they brought that down almost to nothing during that time. But yeah, AC, if you can find that, if you throw that in the nest, that'd be much appreciated. But they have to, again, they're in a rock and a hard place. They can't keep rates at this level without having a debt spiral. Again, the interest is growing at an alarming rate. I think it's, someone posted, it's $100 billion every 3 days is what we're spending. It's something just crazy. That number doesn't sound right, but it's something at an alarming rate. And if you continue to have these rates at this level, there's $17 trillion that has to be refinanced over the next 3 years. And so if you refinance about half of your debt at 5 or 4%, that number really just starts going crazy. Hence the Lynn Alden "Nothing Stops This Train" meme. Does anyone else have anything they want to talk about with Lynn's video or projections for next week's cut?
I found one data source. It looks like I'd misspoke, but this goes through. It's from Forbes, and I threw it in the nest. It goes through the Fed rate history from 1990 all the way to 2024.
I'm sorry, AC, I missed that. Can you say that again?
Well, I just said that it looks like I misspoke. I found a quick article from Forbes and I threw it in the nest. And it goes through the Fed fund rate cuts or history from 1990 to 2024. So that's up there if anyone wants to peruse it.
Thank you for putting that up there. So let's go ahead and move on then. Jacob, if you wouldn't mind getting that second video loaded. And I think this one will have a lot more discussion on, I guess this is more in our wheelhouse. But there was a statement from Peter Thiel, I think it was about 2 or 3 days ago, where he talked about Bitcoin becoming a huge asset class, and that as soon as the banks in the US are able to custody it and collateralize it, the price of Bitcoin is going to explode. And I think we've all seen it, but we're going to go ahead and play that clip again just to make sure for people who had missed it. And then I want to discuss what Whitney Webb had posted about this video. So, Jacob, you give me the thumbs up when you're ready, sir, and we'll play this, and then I'll go over what Whitney Webb had said.
There are only 21 million Bitcoin. there never will be more Bitcoin. When people want to acquire something, it has to go up in price.
Jacob, you ready, sir?
Just like when an artist dies. Right? People pay. There are only 21 million Bitcoin. There never will be more Bitcoin. When people want to acquire something, it has to go up in price. Just like when an artist dies. Right? People pay $3 million for some spray paint on bricks in a place in London because Banksy says he did it. Right? So don't give me a story about there's no value to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is valuable because people believe it's valuable. That's the only reason the dollar has value. It's because everybody in this room thinks the dollar has value. Bitcoin as an asset class is the perfect asset. It's hard money. And that's something I believe you'll see. Countries hold Bitcoin. You'll see more and more companies like Mara, like MicroStrategy, like lots of other companies hold Bitcoin. You'll see financial institutions hold Bitcoin. And as soon as the banks in the US are able to custody and collateralize Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin will explode.
Well said.
Okay, so I think we've touched on that over the last couple of days. But the thing I want to talk about is Whitney Webb came out and really tried to undercut what was going on there. So she said the biggest banks and the cadre of spooky currency speculators have funded and now control most of the infrastructure underlying Bitcoin. She goes on, they control energy, chips, ISPs, general crypto infrastructure, with the openly stated goal of having it only be an asset you don't and can't spend. The US government and this small elite faction hold most of the Bitcoin, and once their financial control grip is complete, they're going to inflate its price through the roof. They said these elites who have a lot of ties to the Epstein network hold so much Bitcoin collectively, and when the currencies implode, they're going to be pumping Bitcoin. When they collapse the currencies, they will buy up everything they didn't manage to buy up during COVID and install their new and beyond Orwellian financial surveillance grip in place using Bitcoin as a reserve asset. So Whitney Webb is saying that the banks and the elites control are going to be able to control Bitcoin, and they're going to throw it through the roof, and then they're going to make it so you can't spend. And I think there's a lot of FUD in here, and I don't think she has any facts to base her opinions on this, but also Bitcoin is decentralized, so there's no way that they're going to be able to stop us from using it. And so they're going to blow up this price, or blow up the Bitcoin price, goes to the moon, and we all get rich. And then they're going to just say, all right, we're going to co-opt it and say that you can't spend it. There would just have to be a fork on that. And so they'll have one fork and we'll have the original, and we're still able to do our own thing. I'd like to get everybody's thoughts on what she had to say.
Look, man, I spoke too soon earlier when I was talking about that, all that hope malarkey, because Whitney Webb just went ahead and ruined my day. But she's good at that. However, it's necessary, I think, because she brings a different type of perspective and realism that I think a lot of people don't really consider. Because there is something that goes beyond just, you know, Bitcoin wins and everybody gets Lambos and everybody gets to be happy, because the simple fact is we're still going to have humans. We're still going to have corporations. We're still going to have governments that are in place. And you better believe that they are going to work to use Bitcoin to do what they do, which is to have more power and control. Any way that they can leverage it, they are going to look for ways to do that exact thing. And I think that's one of the points that she's trying to make right here. Now, I mean, it's a multi-layered concept, really, when you think about it, because in some ways, okay, you would kind of want the country that you're living in to possess a lot of Bitcoin from a governmental perspective. Now, obviously, it sucks, and none of us want tyranny, but if it comes down to another country owning it and them having more power to impose their will upon the country that you're living in from a military perspective, you don't want them to be able to do that. And so obviously it's a complex issue. None of these things are just really cut and dry. But yeah, I think, and it's interesting because we were having a conversation I guess this is a shameless plug, but on the Bitcoin Veterans podcast on Tuesday night, we spoke with Alex Fetsky, and he talks a lot about that in his upcoming book about, you know, what people are going to do after Bitcoin wins. You know, how are people going to behave? How are people going to conduct themselves individually and as governments, as businesses? Are they going to conduct themselves virtuously, or are they not? Now, history will tell us that they will not. And so what can we do individually as people and as Bitcoiners, and how can we work together to, first of all, ensure that we're working virtuously, that we're behaving in a way that is virtuous, but also to ensure that it's happening as much as it can on other levels as well. But anyway, that's my take. She didn't necessarily ruin my day, but it's important to have this type of realism when we're approaching this. Governments are going to do what governments do. Okay, tyrants are going to do what tyrants do. They don't just give up and walk away. They look for every advantage, and they know how to manipulate situations. And I know that we make fun, we've got memes, we joke around, and we want to act like they're a bunch of bumbling idiots. But it's very dangerous to underestimate your adversary. And they do have things that are going on internally, and they have conversations, and they've got some smart people. So it's something that we should never discount. They're going to do what they're going to do, and we need to be prepared to act accordingly.
So, Gabe, really quick, do you think that she's correct in her assumption that the U.S. government and the elites hold a large stake of Bitcoin, and that they are going to be able to co-opt it to their own benefit?
I believe that they hold more, or either directly or indirectly, have influence and control over those that hold it. I think that they have more than most people are willing to accept at this point. Yeah.
Okay. And so I think arguments and pushback are good. And I think I'm definitely going to push back a bit on your statements, just because, again, this is a global thing. This isn't just a U.S. thing. And once it's figured out that the United States has a large stake of Bitcoin, you're going to get every adversary to the United States to acquire as much as they can. So I really don't think, even if she is right, that they do have a large portion and they do have manipulation on others. Again, this is proof of work. It's not proof of stake. It doesn't matter how much they own. It's going to be, everyone has their own choice. And so I don't think that the United States is going to be able to control it, prevent you from spending it, and just hold on to it. And that's just what I think.
I think that there's some truth to that, and I agree with you to a certain point. But I also believe that they still possess the ability to impose their will on those that are holding it, that it may not be them directly. I mean, they are still very influential. Violence is a very effective motivator when trying to get people to comply with you. And so they still do have that ability. They still do have, I mean, if we're going back into the Whitney Webb world, they still do have a tremendous amount of power over the behavior of others through their network of structured and organized blackmail that so many people are in. I mean, let's just look at the whole Epstein situation. We don't have a list. There's a reason for that. But everybody who's on that list is still being manipulated, and they're still being controlled. And if we were to think that anybody on that list doesn't hold Bitcoin, well, that's just not realistic. But it's not only that. They have a tremendous amount of influence, and none of this is going to be out in the open, obviously. But there's a tremendous amount of influence that they have over people. I call it influence, but it's actually control. So they have assets that are all over the world that they own through this blackmail network. And those people, the ones that do hold, they're basically going to be controlling them and calling the shots. Now, obviously, much of it can be protected just due to the nature of Bitcoin. And if people are holding it and they're doing it properly, then, you know, obviously they're going to be able to protect themselves if they're smart about it. However, I'm telling you, man, they're not to be underestimated. I think that we can all look back on history and know that when they've got their mindset on something, they're not going to stop at anything to get what they want.
I will agree with you with that. Yeah, you do not underestimate them. Sorry, Bob.
I was just going to say, isn't it the case that, I mean, there's still way more of us than there is of them? Sure, they might hold a ton of Bitcoin, but I'm just failing to see how you can, you know, blackmail every single person that holds Bitcoin. I think the speculative attack, actually, part of what she said is correct. The speculative attack on Bitcoin will be for the non-holders. The price is going to go sky high and people just won't be able to afford it. So I don't know. I just fail to see how they could get at everybody.
I think that it might be surprising to most people to understand exactly how much information they have on each and every one of us. They have everyone's browser history, even when you're in, private mode or silent mode or whatever it is. They know what everybody's doing. I'm just going to put it to you like that. And we think that we have these certain levels of privacy and we think that we're protecting ourselves and so forth, but they know what we're doing. They know what everybody's doing. And I get you. I agree with what you just said that, as far as driving the price up so nobody can afford it. And I think it was Jordan yesterday that said that we can anticipate getting to a point where you're not able to buy it. The only way you're going to get it is you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to earn it. But, you know, I'm hoping that Whitney is on the extreme side of things. And I think that, you know, she tends to, her mind tends to work that way, which is good. Because we need to consider those things. We need to have these conversations and be prepared for them if they do happen, in the hope, of course, that it's not going to get all the way to that level. But I tend to be cautiously optimistic when it comes to those things.
Yeah, I'll jump in as well. Kind of to Gabe's point, I threw an image, and it's a little bit dated from February of 2024, but it shows the breakout of Bitcoin ownership across different cohorts. And I think Gabe is right that, you know, what's shown there as far as governmental ownership is probably quite a bit higher than actually shown in the chart. But to Whitney Webb's point, I think the biggest takeaway, at least for me, was in that first paragraph where she talked about control of infrastructure, energy, chips, ISPs, and all the manufacturing of what goes into the Bitcoin network and the Bitcoin protocol. If you look at what BlackRock did during its push in DEI, they were able to control companies based on the amount of ownership that they had in that company's stock. I think we'd be a little bit naive to think that large entities have the ability or no longer have the ability to control companies. And so what I'm really saying is I think that Whitney Webb, while she might be on the extreme side, like Gabe said, these conversations need to continue and they need to take place. They need to be top of mind for all Bitcoiners. Otherwise, Bitcoin gets co-opted. And what that really means additionally is that we need to continue to look at freedom technology. Look at all of the things that she highlighted, energy, chips, ISPs, and how can we move that towards more freedom technology and more decentralized technology. And I know that like Sola Satoshi is a good example, taking chip manufacturing outside of countries like China. How do you use a different type of ISP that isn't associated with you, like silent.link? These are the things that Bitcoiners need to continue to think about. Otherwise, it gets co-opted.
I like that. Thank you, AC. We need to just make sure that we're not relying on just one specific group. I still think they have a lot of work ahead of them if they want to try and do that. And I think the ball's in our court and we have the upper hand. Anybody else have anything else? Terrence, did you want to mention anything on this?
No, I mean, I think you guys covered it. I just will remind newcomers to this space and whatnot that it's like, you know, Bitcoin is a tool. It's for everyone. It is peer to peer. It doesn't matter if a state or authoritarian or a government crimps the on or off ramps into fiat, or they, you know, try to penalize merchants or other commerce from transacting on their rails. we have our own rails, you know, and as long as you, Coleman, want to sell me that gun I see on your back, or you, Gabe, that cinnamon tie you're wearing, like, I can send you Bitcoin, you can send me the tie. Like, we do have the power and we have the mechanics of it that Satoshi gave us with Bitcoin, just like, you know, a calculator. The government can make it very difficult for us to buy calculators or watch us use them, but, you know, they can't change that 2 + 3 = 5. And so as long as we run nodes and as long as we protect and hang on to our Bitcoin, they really can't do anything that we can do. Yes, they are, like Gabe said, they can be very influential and they can scare people and they can scare the narrative, which would drive the price down, which would then in effect affect our purchasing power. But the mechanics of Bitcoin, we do control. They cannot take that away from us.
Yes. Thank you, Terrence. Yeah, very well said. And for anybody who is new to the space, make sure not your keys, not your coins is a very common phrase that we throw around. And what that means is when you purchase your Bitcoin, if you purchase from an exchange, withdraw it from the exchange and put it in your own hardware wallet, preferably a cold hardware wallet that's not online, that you have the keys to. And this way, again, you don't have to worry about a hack or someone locking you out of your account. I know we try and promote Bitcoin-only companies, but even the Bitcoin-only companies, I know Swan is really big with it, River, Unchained, they encourage you to take your own Bitcoin and hold it.
Coleman, if I can circle back to Peter Thiel's comments about the banks in the U.S. custodying it, and if you had something else you want to jump in on, that's fine. But I think what I'm seeing, just being in the banking space and talking to, you know, banks, but also corporates that are looking at adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet, I really do think that this cycle we're going to see an increase of adoption for businesses and corporates adding it to the balance sheet. And that's going to force the banks to take it more seriously and to put pressure on, you know, through lobbying groups on regulators and the government to make it easier for banks to provide services around Bitcoin. So I think that's maybe something to point out, that like banks aren't going to just do this. Probably they're pretty resistant to it at this point, but I think the market will drive, you know, regulation, legislation, and eventually, you know, what he's saying is true. I just think it's a little bit longer way off than some people think.
Do you think it happens in this cycle where the banks are going to start lobbying to get the regulation changed?
Yeah, but, you know, it's like the Titanic, right? Like, it just doesn't turn around right away. Until they want to do it, or they see a business need to do it, or they want, you know, they're starting to lose customers because of it, I think there's just not enough corporate adoption yet and business adoption for it to really turn that tide yet. So I think we're going to see, again, increased adoption across corporates and private businesses. And then, you know, that's going to reach a fever pitch. And once it does, I do think those things start to change with the banks. But it's probably next cycle where you see all these services and service offerings for Bitcoin at commercial banks.
Do you think a Harris presidency will push this out even to a further cycle, so 8 years out? Or do you see it just being inevitable with the banks you're talking with?
Yeah, I mean, it's to Lynn Alden's point, right? Nothing stops this train, the new phrase of the day. I think that either administration prints money, and we still are in a reasonably free market. I know they're manipulated, but you can't control the if you can't control inflation, then banks are going to not banks, I'm sorry, corporates and private businesses are going to look at alternatives. And adding Bitcoin to the balance sheet is, you know, that hedge. Now, a lot of Bitcoiners and maximalists don't like Bitcoin. Maximalists don't like that, but I'll take any type of adoption for corporates at this point. And again, seeing inflation the way it's been and that it's going to continue. Dollar debasement is going to continue with money printing. They'll have no choice but to look at it more seriously. And as that adoption grows, you know, banks will take it more seriously as well, because they'll find ways to make money off of it and provide services around it for, you know, their customers that would leave if they otherwise didn't provide those services.
Yes, and I do think price also has a motivating factor for a lot of these corporations and banks. Is once if this cycle does what we think this cycle is going to do, I think it'll be a big fire underneath all their butts to start moving and see the inevitable. Because it really doesn't matter, like you said, which administration gets in, they're going to print money, especially with the debt, where we spend $1 trillion a year and only growing on the interest alone. So we have to print our way out of this. So once inflation ticks up, everyone's going to be looking for a safe haven. And speaking of safe havens, gold's hitting an all-time high right now. I think last time I checked, it was at 2025.6, so 2,560. So it's hitting new all-time highs. So 2571 on the day right now. And so, again, a lot of people who understand the market better than I say that gold is the first one to move when they smell something. And so I think that's a telling sign that we can see Bitcoin start moving in the same direction. Another news, Metaplanet out of Japan bought another 38.46 Bitcoin for about 300 million yen. They now hold a combined 398.8 Bitcoin on their balance sheet, which is about 22.7 million US dollars. So they're really trying to take a page out of Michael Saylor's playbook. Does anyone have any info? I know Michael Saylor said that they're doing a $2 billion offering or a round of financing. Does anyone have any update on that, on how it's going and when the results will be released? I take that as a no. So it'll be really interesting to see when that comes through, especially if they're getting it done in the next couple of weeks with the Bitcoin price staying underneath 60. It'll be really interesting to see how much they're able to acquire and what that does to the needle. There was another video yesterday we were going to try and play, but go ahead, Bob. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, again, just looking at things and trying to be realistic, you know, there's a few companies that understand it and are using Bitcoin as a treasury reserve asset, which essentially just means, you know, they're not looking at operating based on the dollar or any foreign currencies. They're really focused on acquiring as much Bitcoin as possible and obviously using leverage to do it, cheap leverage. But I will still contend, I think, for the most part, the corporates that do adopt Bitcoin won't be using it as a treasury reserve to start. They'll be dipping their toes in. And so, you know, we have to be excited about small wins for boards and C-suite folks that get it and start adding it to their balance sheet, maybe through cash flows or, you know, a pegged strategy where they're saying, hey, we want 3% or we want 5% of our treasury to sit in Bitcoin, and then they'll have to rebalance and those types of things. But there's all kinds of different strategies for this. I think it's cool to see the leadership from, you know, these couple of companies that are using it as a treasury reserve. We should all be excited about that. But when it comes to adoption, I'll caution everybody to, you know, in your thinking that just everybody is going to flip over to making Bitcoin their unit of account, so to speak. Most companies won't be doing that anytime soon.
No, but the ones that are getting on early, I think, are going to reap the rewards. I think we talked about that over the last couple of days. It's
for sure. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see these companies get rewarded heavily for their first mover advantage. So there's definitely another thing I wanted to talk about today that I think is pretty significant that's going to most likely affect everybody if it passes to be true. So Secretary Blinken hints that the U.S. will lift restrictions on Ukraine using long-range arms in Russia. So this decision is understood to have already been made in private, as Secretary of State says in a key briefing in Kyiv, that the U.S. continued to adopt its policy this policy stance change, I guess, was influenced by Iran's dispatch of ballistic missiles to Moscow. Speaking in Kyiv alongside the UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy, Blinken said the U.S. had from day one been willing to adapt its policy as the situation on the battlefield in Ukraine changed, and we will continue to do this. So that's a really alarming situation that's going on. Putin definitely said that was going to be a red line if they were going to start targeting deep inside and if they were going to start using U.S. Ammunitions. So I'd like to get anyone's thoughts on this. Gabe, I think you'd be a good one to kind of dissect it and what you think.
Well, first of all, the entire situation is something that's not being addressed in a realistic way. I think as far as the larger narrative is concerned, if you want to call it the national conversation, there are so many that are just accepting the fact that this is something that we must do, that being in a proxy war with Russia is just, we've got to do it. It's already been accepted. And, you know, trying to shift that perspective from that to anything else is like standing on the coastline punching waves. It's just not going to, I don't see how that's going to change. And the debate was further evidence of that the other night also, for those of you that experienced that debacle. But obviously there's a push. Yeah. Man, you know, I started out as the guy full of hope today, and you're setting me up, Coleman, but that's all right, man. I'm going to be real about it. But there was actually a post earlier this morning that was basically asking if they were trying to put us into World War III. And I mean, the reality is all the incentives are there for that to happen. I think it was Lawrence Lepard posted something earlier. Sharing something from the U.S. Civil Defense News. Yeah, the long range weapons. Anyway, yeah, just fact checking myself before ABC does it. So, every incentive is there for them to push us forward. I mean, and it, you know, it's one of those situations where you can look at what people are saying versus looking at what people are doing. Well, now they're saying and doing all the same things that are pointing towards wanting to have war on a large scale. And they basically need it at this point. Everything that is most important, the economy, the national security, you know, anything that is now affecting people and has been for some time on a very personal level and hurting people that can't afford food and can't afford to pay their rent. You can't have a single family income and expect to survive anymore. But the incentives are there for them to have war on a large scale. And I believe that that's the direction that we're going. Now, again, we do have reason to hope. We do have Bitcoin. And if there's anything that is going to ever get us to a point where we can de-incentivize war on a large scale, then it's going to be Bitcoin. And this is one of those reasons why I think so many of us take Bitcoin adoption so personally. It's not just about, you know, building up your own stack and getting rich. It's really about transforming the way that things function in this world. And warfare is one of those things. When we can de-incentivize war on a large scale like this, you start to see things change. But I think it's going to continue to take a little bit of time for it to happen. And unfortunately, it may take a situation like this continuing to escalate and get even uglier, and for us to play a more active role in it. I should certainly differentiate. When I say us, I actually mean our government to become more involved in it, and for them to use our military as they are known to do to push forward their intent. But I think it's going to take a little bit more of that happening for people to finally stand up and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take any more of this. And to finally start taking action, taking people out of jobs that they're in and replacing them with other people that are going to make other decisions, and finding themselves more interested and more directed towards Bitcoin and finding a way that we can fix the money and then start really having an impact on the world. That's probably a longer answer than what you were looking for. But my bottom line is, I think that this is just another step towards war on a larger scale, because the incentives are there. They have every reason to do it and very few reasons not to do it at this point. So I see it coming. But as individuals, I'll go back to a common theme that we talk about in this room. Strengthen your communities, strengthen yourselves in every way. Make sure that you got your stuff straight. Buy and hold self-custody, your Bitcoin. Teach your family members about it. Teach your neighbors about it. Prepare yourself and prepare the people that are close to you. And by doing that, and then sharing what we learn and sharing how we do that with each other in our own expanded networks, we begin to see really the power of that network effect. And then we see a strong, decentralized network of communities that are capable of withstanding situations like this and coming out the other side even better for it.
I like that, Gabe. Thank you for hitting all those points. And you know, I do apologize. You came in here so light, bright, and happy, and I just completely just made you all doom and gloomy. So we'll go ahead and start changing the subject to something a little bit better. Former NBA player of Chicago Bulls, I think we've all heard of him, Scottie Pippen, posted on Twitter or X that he's extremely bullish on Bitcoin. And I just saw a post from Wicked where he's showing that the post-halving cycle, and it looks like we're about to take off on this rocket ship for this cycle. And I know price always gets everybody happy and pumping. So just to give a little context, September's been notoriously a down month for the price of Bitcoin. But I think there's a lot of factors lining up. With the Fed rate cuts coming in, if it comes in at 25 basis points, it means that the economy is still doing good. They just need to lower the rates. It sets up a really good situation for Bitcoin to really take off. And October and November have been really good months in prior cycles for Bitcoin. So I think that's something we can all get really excited about. Really quick, I'd like to go ahead and give a quick shout out to our partners and big thank you. We have a new partner I'd like to start off with first, and it's Palladian Tower Tactical. They offer professional-grade firearms and tactical training to equip men and women to be the protectors of life. The owner and lead instructor, Scott Wiley, is a combat veteran and former airborne infantryman who fought in Afghanistan. He's been doing this for over 10 years, so please check them out at Palladian Tower Tactics with an S.com. The next one I want to hit on is Solar Satoshi. Again, Whitney Webb made it clear for us. We want to make sure that the chips and the mining are decentralized. So check them out at solosatoshi.com. Get your own home miner. I believe Hunter and his wife, people of Solar Satoshi, will be joining us next week. So stay tuned for that. I don't have a date set yet. And last but not least, Punchplate. You have your cold hardware wallet. You need to make sure you have your seed phrase on metal. Don't put it on paper. It gets wet. It's damaged. In a fire, it burns. Check them out at punchplate.com. And last, make sure we check out our video and interview with Anders on Noster. The Bitcoin veterans at the conference, we're able to do a lot of interviews, and we're going to be releasing them over the coming weeks. One of the first interviews we're going to be releasing is Anders at his pleb party. So check it out on Noster, the Bitcoin veterans handle. So we're starting to get to the top of the hour. We're going to start wrapping everything up. Does anyone else have anything they'd like to touch on today or comment, speak upon? I know this is kind of like a lull in the market and the Bitcoin price. We've just been kind of raging. So I know there's not a lot of things to hit on, but I'm extremely bullish. I think things are going to go great. I know, again, we talked about a lot of doom and gloom things that could happen in the near future, but I'm still extremely bullish and positive. I think that we have a lot going for us, and we just need to zoom out and get a 360 view on everything. That's not saying that you should be complacent, or you should become lax. Still be prepared but just make sure that, again, things are going well. And I think we're officially about to start seeing the price do some positive moves in the near term.
Absolutely. And I know I got kind of deep on a lot of these things today, but the bottom line is Lynn Alden is right. Nothing stops this train. And as Bitcoiners, we should be accustomed to having a low time preference and having the ability to zoom out and take a look at this for what it is. Okay, it's going to do what it's going to do. No one expects everything to be easy all the time. If you do, you're not paying attention. And so, yeah, I'm fired up for the future. I'm excited. I want to learn more about what's going on up in Alaska. That's definitely got my attention right now, because there is nothing better than getting together with Bitcoiners in person. If you're not meeting Bitcoiners in person, if all your Bitcoin connections are all on the internet, man, get out and go meet somebody somewhere. Find a meetup, get plugged in, man, because Bitcoiners are so much better in person. The internet is great, but you got to step out there and you got to hang out with each other. So, but yeah, I feel like we talked about a lot of relevant things today, and it's not always going to sound exciting and it's not always going to be fun, but it is important that we take a look at it. And again, zoom out, maintain perspective on things. But remember, it's just like you said, nothing stops this train.
Oh, nothing stops this train. $35.3 trillion in debt. A trillion seconds is almost 32 billion years. So again, like, these numbers are large. There's no way out of it. But you're going to have to print your way out, or debt jubilee. Both of those scenarios are great for what we hold near and dear to us. Sorry, my allergies are bothering me this morning. So the thing on that, then we'll go ahead and start wrapping this up. We'll start a little bit early today. So again, I want to thank everybody who's joining us. I really appreciate everybody who came up today and spoke. It really means a lot to me. Bob Van Kirk, Terrence, Gabe Lord, I really love your rants. AC, Hunter, I see you up here. I really do appreciate you guys coming up here and helping us continue the conversations and reaching everybody. Everybody in the audience who's listening, who's just found us, who's a listener every day, or who just has us on the background so you don't have to hear the noises in your head, I really do appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to us. We do this every Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock Central Standard Time. We will be back here tomorrow on Friday. We'll have a really fun episode. And then we have some great special guests coming up in the next couple of weeks. So I'll be excited to start sharing those when we get the dates confirmed. Like Gabe said earlier, every Tuesday night, we have the Bitcoin Veterans Podcast. This week's guest was Alex Vetsky of the Bitcoin, or sorry, not the Bitcoin, the Communist Unmanifesto. That's his book. Go give it a listen. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on the link on our Nostr page. Go check that out. And again, make sure everyone's getting on the mission. You're for Bitcoin and we're against tyranny. So give us a check. If you're a veteran, send us a message. More than happy to communicate with you. But I think that's it, everybody. That'll be a wrap. We'll see y'all tomorrow morning. Get out there and crush it today.